Hello and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the phony, fraudulent, fabricated world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and someone is joining me. Someone from far away. I'm getting a B. Does anyone in the audience know someone with a B name?
My name starts with B.
Oh my gosh.
It's Ben.
Ben, welcome, Ben.
Hey!
Hey, you way blew out your microphone there. There is a 100% chance of that happening. This week we're taking a look at Season 8, Episode 1, Columbo Goes to the Guillotine, or as they say in this episode, Guillotine. This episode stars Elliot Blake as a pretend psychic who murders a professional skeptic, partially to keep his scam going, but also as revenge for a betrayal in a Ugandan prison. It's a little complicated.
It's very complicated. Also, that's the character's name? Character's named Elliot Blake, yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. What is the name of the guy? Oh, boy.
No, that's not
the name of the guy. The name of the guy is Anthony Andrews.
Yes.
Yes, that is the name of the actor.
There are two Anthonys in this, yes.
I
forgot the other guys. I'm sorry, I just totally interrupted your flow.
No, it's fine. That's great. People love when these fun mistakes happen. appearing as the frankly delightful Max Dyson is veteran character actor Anthony Zerbe, who is best known as the guy who you think is John Voight for like 10 minutes in whatever he appears in. You're like, is that John Voight? It isn't. It's Anthony Zerbe.
That's too real.
This episode also features another iconic TV detective, Robert Costanzo, who plays the bar owner. Should be famous to any of us who grew up in the 90s as Detective Harvey Bullock on Batman the Animated Series. Yes, a beloved character, Harvey Bullock.
Is really beloved? Is that
he's lovable. Rounding out the cast is James Green, familiar to modern audiences as aged Councilman Milton on Parks and Recreation, and Tony Amendola, who in addition to playing a priest in just about everything he's ever appeared in, including this episode, plays a Jedi Master in the just-released Jedi Fallen Order video game, which I have played, but Jedi are really just space priests, so I think that also counts.
Still a priest. Still a priest.
this is a pretty good episode. I think I really liked it. There's just one thing that I think I would take out, and if you took it out, I think the episode it'd be a really good episode of television.
Is that the magic?
No, it's Columbo.
He's
very bad in this. I have to say, I really did not. I'm not on board for the older Columbo so far.
Really?
Yeah.
That's weird. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I thought he was fine. It definitely, I get it. It's long after the last time he played this character.
It's over 10 years since he played Columbo again the last time.
But I think he did an okay job of leaning back into it.
I think it's safe to say it's a different take on the character.
Well, sure. I mean, it's an older
Columbo. But the sharpness is sort of gone. But I think that's just because he's older, maybe.
Let's be fair.
Yeah.
I mean, you might be right, and that could, the sharpness missing could be him just being duller because he's rusty at playing the character.
Maybe.
It could be a character choice about the fact that this is an older Columbo now, and so he's maybe a little more genteel. It's not really the word I would want to use.
No,
but,
grandfatherly, I think, is probably the appropriate world. He's acting sort of in the manner of a grandfather, especially with the little kid, which we'll talk about.
I mean, that's the thing, right? Is it's like, I feel like that, anyway.
this episode is about Elliot Blake. He is a psychic who is working with a psychic research institute in LA, and they are
Anman Institute.
That's right, and they are scamming the U.S. government, which ordinarily I don't have a problem with.
It's revealed that they are basically conspiring to maintain her funding.
It's revealed immediately.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, after, you know, after that first sort of test.
Yeah, the, like, four-minute scene of a test, yeah.
They dunk us into, like, the classic ESP test with those flashcards. Mm-hmm. If anyone's ever seen the original Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters, yep.
Right, there's that infamous scene with Peter Venkman, like, electrocuting the student who is actually getting them right, right. While he's lying to basically to hit on a female student. Venkman's a creep, everybody. But like, just face it.
Yeah, but unlike that scene, which was funny and interesting, that this scene is long and not particularly interesting.
Well, this scene is like long, and it's meant to be setting up, you know, tension, and like the music is it. So that's the thing, right? This is definitely like an 80s movie.
We are into the 80s 100%.
Yeah.
We've got...
But I mean, like, it's got all of that kind of vibe of, know, something made in the 80s and for none sure. of the vibe of the Columbo show.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of stark lighting.
Yeah.
That 80s, like, you know, they figured out how to shoot in low light and they're... God damn it, they're gonna do it. You know, there's a lot of blacks.
Every fucking scene is like, see how dark we can get it and still get shit to show up on film. Yeah, I get it. Also, I can't see anything.
it's very moody. This looks like an episode of Quantum Leap, I think it's fair to say. Like,
that's accurate.
Pretty much exactly like that. It has a very this is instantly recognizable as late 80s, early 90s television.
Well, I mean, the conceit basically is that Elliot Blake is a mentalist, is a fake psychic.
I have a little clip that kind of sets it up. So why don't we play that right now? Hit it.
The third card after a wavy line is always false. How many times we've been through this?
I'm sorry, Elliot. I tried.
Try to understand. There's a precision to all this. And it starts with the premise that you will lose your institute unless you please the military and Mr. Harrow. Do you think you please them, Paula?
No, not yet.
Not yet, because you gave them 74% accuracy when you and I agreed to set a level of 86%.
Right. We'll rehearse it again. The first answer after the square is always true, unless there's an intervening circle. And the second answer after a wavy line is always false, unless that wavy line itself is false. Or is it true? God, I don't know anymore. So much for our scientific study of extrasensory perception.
Yeah, so, I mean, you think you get it, everything from there. They've done what psychics do in reality, people who do this sort of thing. They have these elaborate sort of setups where they essentially use either cold reading or something like that to trick people.
Yeah. So the short answer, it's basically an evil stage magician.
Yes. That's you're just repeating yourself. But the worst kind of stage magician, 100%. The subcategory that is the most vile would be the professional psychic.
Go ahead.
As much as I pretend to hate on magicians in reality, I do actually find, like, professional psychics to be kind of loathsome, especially how they sort of can prey on people's insecurities and use these ways to just steal money from people.
Well, I mean, let me take a minute and kind of unpack this. Like,
sure.
Absolutely. And that's a huge chunk of the thing. There are also people who genuinely believe in psychic abilities and all of that. And that's one thing. The people who are just exploiting people, that's obviously Elliot Blake in this. And that is kind of the thing that they are sort of getting at. The fellow they mentioned outside of the military is actually like a CIA dude. They don't really make that super clear. They hint at it a couple of times and kind of say it in the episode, but like they keep referring to him by name rather than, hey, he works for the CIA. But a big backdrop to this is one of the reasons why I enjoyed it is because I knew about the military's obsession with chasing down psychic phenomena, especially during the Cold War era.
The Men Who Stare at Goats is a film adaptation of a book, I believe, that's actually supposedly a true story about that that exact thing.
Yeah, and that's the stuff, like, again, it was like the Soviet Union was researching this stuff, and so we started researching it, you know, in the States, at, you know, thinking that, like, well, this could give us, like, the edge and all. So, like, so it's a very real thing at this point as far as
I think this is kind of loosely based a little bit on the James Randi, what's his name, Uri Geller, their sort of relationship. They had this very contentious public. James Randi is a magician and professional skeptic who who wrote like several books, I think, about Uri Geller, about how he was a fraud and was stealing people's money and that kind of
thing. And Uri Geller was a spoon bender.
Yes.
Yeah. A mentalist, basically. Yeah. And that's the thing that I was going to say is, like, there's a history. There's actually quite a history of stage magicians outing mediums and psychics as frauds.
Like, Penn and Teller are also very into that as well.
Couple hundred years. In fact, it's House of Mysteries, I think, is the two-part book that Teller put out, which is like an annotated version of a book that this classic magician wrote. And it was like detailing all of his incredible tricks, which he basically picked up by studying mediums and the bullshit acts they would put on to trick people.
There's
and
also so he
integrated that into
Also famously, Harry Houdini was would go to like seances and bust them up. Like, he would just kind of sit in on them and fuck with them. So yeah, there is a longstanding thing, but it's a little more complicated than just the natural hatred between stage magicians and psychics. There is this other thing. I want to play a little bit of Max meeting Elliot. They have, I think it's fair to say, I don't think this is me reading into it, there is a palpable sexual tension whenever these two appear on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Play the clip and then we'll talk about
it. Talk about it. Okay.
You're Elliot Blake.
And you're Max, the Magnificent.
Just so we understand each other, I've tested hundreds of you people. Your incredible, mystical, psychic gifts.
Surely some were genuine?
None. Not a one. Nothing I couldn't explain and duplicate. That's in case anyone here has the idea I'm a believer. So, if you still want to play, these are the protocols.
Yeah, so that's just that's a little bit of the introduction of Max.
So the deal. So we got. I really want to talk about their relationship, but I'm just gonna speed through some of the basics of the plot here. Basically, so what happens is the CIA agent basically says, "Hey, we need absolute proof that your dude actually works.
The early test was a bust. They didn't get significantly better than guessing.
I mean, it's like 73%, and they, like they said in that clip, they, you know, agreed on 86%. 73% is pretty good.
Pretty good, but apparently not good enough for the CIA.
Right. Well, the CIA obviously wants results, which is to say they will want to be able to spy on Russians psychically, which... that goofiness aside, that basically they put down an ultimatum of, you know, we want to work with this, but for this to happen, we need to have you pass a test that we set up and we set the conditions on. And those conditions are, hey, we brought in Max over here, this magician who's dedicated his life to exposing psychic frauds. And he will set the rules and strict boundaries around the test on you for remote viewing. Remote viewing being like basically the idea that a psychic can perceive, you know, a location from a distance and describe detail about it or anything like that. And so the So that's kind of the setup of it. And then and then it gets exposed that Max and Elliot already know each other, spent time in a prison in Uganda together.
Yeah.
And Blake actually learned magic from Max.
Yeah.
And so Max, like,
I've got a clip of that as well. If you're on a roll, then we don't have to stop.
Yeah, that. I do want to hear that clip because I think it's important. But let me just really quickly get through the plot.
Sure.
Because I know we're gonna forget about it because we want to talk about all these details.
Yeah.
So basically, Max rigs the thing so that Blake passes.
Yeah.
And then
as kind of a make good.
Yeah, is a mea culpa, and then we find out that Max kind of ditched him in prison. That, like,
Blake was
left in prison for 3 more years, but it's actually Max sold him out to get out of prison earlier.
He did or he didn't. It's not clear. He definitely Elliot.
Columbo says he did. Later
does
in
he?
The episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So he definitely did, but Blake murders Max with Max's trick a guillotine in his own workshop, and then it's the classic kind of chase back of Columbo trying to solve all this stuff, which I will say would have gone a lot fucking faster if the magicians weren't like, well, you're not a magician, so we can't tell you the secret to this trick.
Seriously.
Even though somebody was murdered, like, okay, you could have shaved off about a good hour.
This is the same reason that Nazi almost got away that one time. Like, just tell the guy.
Yep, just tell him the trick, dude.
Just tell him the trick.
He's not
going to
tell anybody else. Yeah.
Proprietary, you know, information or whatever, but like...
Induct him into your guild of magicians.
It's a murder. Like, you need to tell the police what's going on. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. But so anyway, back to Max and Elliot.
Max is making a guillotine for he's not a stage magician anymore. I think he just does this debunking, but also he makes props for stage magicians.
He
I just
makes,
want to talk because I haven't said anything for 5 minutes.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm in this episode as well.
So he makes he manufactures tricks for stage magicians, and he's loved by the community. In fact, at his funeral, I wish we could show you visuals of it. It is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. There are like 6 magicians in white, like white on white tailcoats and top hats. And then like,
you're just going to talk about the clips I'm going to play.
It's ridiculous. I love that you have a clip of it.
I have clips of everything.
But so
what do you got? I got a clip
to the sexual tension thing. In conversations between the two men.
Yeah.
There is a point where Max says something to the effect of what we meant to each other in prison. And that there's clearly an attempt to establish that they were at the very least intimate in prison.
Since we're talking about it, I'm just going to play the clip that I have because this is related.
120 degrees in the shade or an afternoon of poker in a Ugandan prison.
I read that in your book.
They're meeting at the docks.
Dyson on mine reading. You're giving away our secrets, Max.
We survived the African slammer together. You were a very good student.
Why not? You taught me everything you knew. Everything I know.
There's a kind of a weird quality to the vocal work of Anthony Andrews, where I always think that the clip is playing at the wrong speed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's just
his
absolutely.
Voice. Like
that's just him.
I just had to check the runtime and make sure that like the video that I had of this hadn't been slowed down for like copyright reasons or something. But that's just how he sounds.
No, man, that's how he sounds in the version that I watched too. Like that's just him. Like he's just it's not a drawl. Unfortunately, I don't know the nuances of accents from the UK to break it down, but it's definitely, you know, it's that kind of thing where it's got like the equivalent of a southern drawl in sort of how he speaks, if that makes sense.
Yep.
You know, but
I get what you're saying.
Yeah. But he was like, his history is like a Shakespearean actor, if I remember right.
Mm, yeah, that would like, that would definitely like, track. He was in the star of the Ivanhoe, the film version of Ivanhoe.
Of course.
He has kind of a strange sort of particular way of talking.
He really does.
I mean,
it works in this because he's kind of a pompous ass.
I wish there was kind of more between these two guys because of how like interesting they are in the scene with each other. Unfortunately, they don't really last past like the 22-minute mark is when the murder happens, I think, around there. Here, let's play a little bit of what's an extremely tense scene, I would say, where Elliot is confronting Max. Over the murder.
It's
a lot. Yeah.
3 more years for me.
That isn't true. And every hour of every night, I dreamt about being like this.
Now let me go. Here and now.
I gave them money. I never betrayed you. I never gave them you.
If you want to kill me, you can, but try to remember what we meant to each other in that place, what we gave each other, and then put that together with this craziness. It doesn't make sense.
Okay, Max.
So he does a little false. Yep. He just kind of tortures him, really, because he intends to kill him at that point. But he holds a gun on him and tries to force a confession out of him, but Max won't. He won't give it up in that moment.
Right. Yeah, he doesn't give it up. But it's very clear that Elliot like was gonna kill him no matter what. Like he made up his mind that Max sold him out. And and that whole thing is messed up because he does that and then he dumps all the bullets out of the revolver.
Sure.
Like kills him with the guillotine, which is, nasty.
I would say
that's
so.
That's a nice way to say it.
And we're definitely in the 80s now because there is blood. Blood exists now in the Columbo universe.
There's a backsplatter of blood.
There's a blood that comes, so you see blood on the blade when he's killed, and then the way the murder scene is discovered is from dripping blood dripping down into the bar downstairs.
Yeah, which is really nasty.
It's pretty. Yeah, it is. It's pretty grim.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite a way to like kick the door in with a new episode of Columbo. Yeah. We're back. Also, we have blood.
Yeah. Well, that's the '80s. People were very desensitized to everything by then. This is. It's interesting because, this new sort of format, this new kind of like. Feel to it. I think kind of maybe my problem with it is that Columbo himself doesn't match this new feel of it because Columbo feels a little softer, the show feels sharper. And so it's maybe just the shift between the two is too jarring for me personally.
I think that's totally fair.
Because we go from this, kind of gruesome thing of a guy's head being cut off to Columbo coming in and like breaking an egg on the wall and like, having like a little sort of a chat with the beat cop about just some random nonsense. Who cares?
And then chatting with like the proprietor of the magic shop downstairs while they're like sawing a hole in the door to open up the deadbolt.
Exactly.
It is definitely discordant.
Yes. For sure.
Outside of that, like I think it's pretty, nobody's bad in it, but it's pretty unremarkable for sort of the remainder of it as far as like, there's no real kind of twists or turns. It's about what you would expect in that, like, Columbo then is like, oh, well, you're a psychic. Would you maybe try to read this room and help me solve this murder? I got this idea from like the articles my wife shows me in newspapers.
It's sort of him gradually learning all of the tricks of the trade of a sham psychic.
Right, and down sort to of bribing a child who is like the most smug little fucker ever.
Yeah.
But in fairness, gets the job done. So hey, he does. At least
yeah,
at least he's got a reasonable sense of his own skill set.
That's
I'll give
true.
The kid
he
that.
Is not. He is not. We're talking about Tommy, played mm-hmm. by Michael Bacall, who would grow up and write the. Scott Pilgrim versus the World screenplay.
Screenplay? Nice work,
yeah,
man.
So, hey, good on him. Yeah. I mean, he had good source material. That definitely helped.
Sure, oh, but...
And my phone is giving me an alarm for no reason. That's cool.
nailed it.
Thank you, phone. so, yeah, the catch ultimately is kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that because there's a fake catch.
Yes,
like the first catch is basically what happens is Elliot gets offered a job with the CIA, and the guy right. basically says, "Hey, I fly you out tomorrow night. If you accept, mm-hmm. You will no longer be Elliot Blake. Elliot Blake will cease to exist. You'll be right. well taken care of, but you know you'll be a CIA asset."
He's going to go to CIA psychic Hogwarts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, more likely he's going to end up in the fucking village, but that's another story.
I mean, he's going to be dead because there's no way he can right. like continue this forever. I don't know what.
Yeah, he's not going to be able to bullshit his way through that forever.
He doesn't have an end game for this. I don't know I don't know why he would want to get on that plane.
I don't know. His end game, I think, is just getting away from Columbo at that point.
Yeah,
so
maybe
that he can, you know, scam somebody else for more money and
right.
also fall off the grid so that he's not charged with murder. But so literally the plane opens up and fucking Columbo is on it and is like, "Well, I've got this writ." You know, he's basically like, "Hey, so you have to come with me." And then Columbo and Tommy, it's Tommy, right?
The kid. Yep. Yeah.
Basically play out the remote viewing.
Yes, they do. They thing. Do the fake remote viewing. So this is in the first test. It's the same test both times. They
right.
have the people take open a map guide to
yeah.
LA. They've got blindfolds on. They open a map
yeah.
guide.
So
they take a marker pen. They mark the page. They drive to wherever the mark was. And then they get out and they say, "Look, you know, choose a direction," and they choose north. And then look north,
right.
take a picture, and then the person inside
fax it in.
Yes, they fax it
with
in
with a portable fax machine, which is like my favorite
hand scanning fax machine. And
it's
then
so dumb.
They have the person in the isolation chamber tries to draw what the photo is, basically.
Right. They then are supposed to concentrate on that person and,
yes.
and intuit what they have seen.
What they see.
And
yeah.
so, right. And so that was the original remote viewing test. And then Columbo basically gets in the ISO booth.
And does the same.
As the psychic.
Yep.
And does the exact same thing.
Yep.
And yeah, basically does this in front of the CIA guy and everybody. And then it's just like, welcome. And walks out.
That's right. And he just says, no, I'm not a psychic. That was a magic trick. Ask that guy how it's done. I can't reveal to you how it's done, but I'm sure, you know, your new friend will be more than happy to tell you.
Yeah.
So
he can't tell you because it's a magician's only. Yeah. Basically, Mike
right.
drops on the fucking guy and leaves. And I literally wrote in my notes, like, how is that not the fucking catch?
Yeah.
And
how is that not the end
reason,
of the episode?
The reason is because they wanted symmetry with the guillotine. And
right.
also the title was Columbo Goes to the Guillotine. And like,
so there has to be a moment where Columbo gets into the guillotine. That's where
right.
it goes.
Which has already happened once.
Yes.
With the proprietor of the magic shop downstairs. But
I don't know that they ever say his name, but it is apparently Bert Spindler.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't think they ever say his name.
Actually, Tommy, I think, says his name once.
Oh, okay.
And that might be it. But so, when Elliot kills Max, he picks up basically the guard that goes around the neck of the person in the guillotine.
Right.
And it's got two clear markers that say safe and danger.
Yes.
You know, so it's like, so they
one
tell
is,
us, even though no one will tell Columbo.
One is red and one is green.
Right. It's very clear put it this way around if you don't want to murder the person.
Yes.
Put it this other way if you want to murder a thing.
So Columbo takes him back up to the thing, lays out all this evidence that he has, and then says, will you help me with the, he says, I'm going to get in the guillotine.
Right. And he says, I'm going to get in this thing. Will you give me a hand with this? Basically, hey, here's your opportunity to murder me.
Right. He also kind of implies that he doesn't quite have it all together, and he hasn't really told anyone. So he's kind of saying boy, if you killed me, I guess they would all just go away. Well, anyway, I'm just gonna get into this guillotine. Yeah. So
anyway, I'm just gonna get into this cool trick because no one would ever,
literally killed in. I think it's probably fine.
You're probably not going to do the same thing, even though you're literally wearing the same outfit you did when you came here to murder Max.
Yeah, for sure.
That's how hard they wanted to, box that symmetry in.
Yeah. And then it turns out that Columbo has taken the screws off of the bottom, the plates that had safe and unsafe. What is it? Yep. Safe and danger or something
safe
like that?
Safe and danger, I think.
Yeah. So he's taken these nameplates off and then put them on the opposite way. Essentially, if Columbo was wrong about the type of person that he was, which I guess this is the Columbo thing, right? He breaks them down. He knows what kind of person they are.
But he already knows. Yeah.
But if he had miscalculated, if at the very last minute Elliot had just decided, I'm not going to kill a cop. I'm already in deep enough. I'm not going to go in deeper. Columbo would be dead.
What was his gamble? That he would confess and then Columbo would just get out of the guillotine without using it? There's part of me that's obviously it's written this way, so this is always how it was going to be, but it's wouldn't you maybe ask someone to rig that fucking thing so that neither side would let the blade through?
Yes.
Just for your own fucking safety?
But he has switched the thing so the Elliot puts the guard in the danger way, he thinks, but it turns out it's actually the safe way and Columbo is fine. And then and then this happens. I have a clip of it. I don't know.
Yes, please play this.
Visually, I don't think. I mean, it's a very visual bit, but
we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it. But I wanna. Let's hear it.
You're under arrest for the crime of murder, and I'll have to apply the penalty.
Columbo has a gun. Uh-huh. Shoot this guy.
Yeah. Basically. I'm gonna dispense justice right here, and he fucking pulls the trigger.
And it's like the Joker's gun. It's the bang.
It's the
gun.
Fake gun. It's the bang gun,
which is established earlier on in the episode. So that's a fun. If there's a bang gun early on in the episode, then it's got to go off. That's
check off
the bang gun.
fuck.
It's so crazy because at that moment, Columbo pulls out a gun, and you're like, when has Columbo ever had a gun? This is crazy. The fact that it's not a real gun and that Columbo only pretends to shoot this man in the head in cold blood doesn't make it less crazy. It's still fucking crazy.
No, it's still insane.
It's so
and then that's
weird.
The freeze frame as they roll fucking
it's a
credits.
It's a triple freeze frame. It is a freeze frame from there's an over-shoulder shot from Elliot, there's an over-the-shoulder shot from Columbo, and then there is a two-shot of both of them from the side. It is a triple freeze frame episode.
It is so insane.
End to the episode. It's crazy. And it comes out of literally nowhere.
Yeah, honestly, I thought it was done after the guillotine trick. And then when he pulled out the gun, I was just I didn't know what to say. I was just like, what the fuck?
It's one of the most baffling things that's happened in an episode.
Again, I mean you're right. It is that fucking Chekhov rule.
Yeah.
It's that they had it in there. And they were just like, we gotta make sure we use this because there was a gun and we never fired any guns, so we gotta get something. But
that's
anyway.
I mean, this is legit the Joker move. Like, yeah. The only thing difference between this is that at the end, if Columbo did that, he like pressed the trigger again and it fired the bang part into the guy's skull and killed him. Like, that's
right.
Like, but you can't just point a gun and shoot it at somebody if you're a cop. That's not allowed, even if it's a bang gun. That's not cool. Right.
Yeah, it's not great. But yeah, again, the weird double catch is. It's so, yeah. I mean, and again, I, like I said, like I can walk back to the, like, oh, it's the symmetry of this whole thing. And also the title that they gave this episode, but it's still wild. Like, I feel like the catch could have been solved in that first thing where he ruined a dude's fucking life and the guy lost his shit.
yeah. But, there's no reason he couldn't have done it there. Like he basically like figured out this crazy trick, which, actually, this guy wasn't even responsible for. The trick was Max's.
Yeah. Max was the one who made good tricks.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Because, like, so they break down the, they break down basically
how this
trick
is done. We're not magicians, so we can just reveal what happened.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. also they tell you in the episode, that's kind of part of the joy of waiting for Columbo to reenact that bit.
Yeah.
But it's that, so the guys put on the, there are three people out in the field who mark the map. But the secret is they put on a blindfold before they mark the map. And so they don't see, one, that their pen doesn't actually leave a mark. Two, that every page in the map book is the same. And three, that the spot on the map has already been marked and it's the same on every single page. So no matter where they turn and no matter where they mark, it's always the same spot.
Yep. Unfortunately, one of the side effects of transitioning to the 80s is that we are out of the cool 70s suit phase of the show.
Yeah, we are. Because the first clip you played where Elliot is going on about the routine with the EASP cards, holy shit, that outfit he's wearing is like some serious like 80s failure. Mm-hmm. Outside of the collar of the jacket doesn't actually sit against the collar of his shirt, which is like really bad. He only has the bottom button buttoned on it. And I'm sorry, but you're no Columbo. Columbo gets to do that, and like some really stylish Japanese guys get to get away with that. But for the rest of us, we look stupid. And he definitely looks stupid in that. And then it's got the same, like the really rigid, hard shoulders, you know, very padded. And that's the weird thing, right? Is there other folks, like the CIA guy, when he's in a suit, like it's fine. It's not remarkable in any way. It fits him properly. You know, it's kind of along the, like I took notes about Max's outfits because they were really sort of old professory, you know, like he had kind of like a sort of salt and pepper herringbone. I think it's might be technically a broken herringbone because it's like herringbone and then sort of a bird's eye and then more herringbone.
Yeah.
Like wearing that kind of slouchy jacket over like a Tattersall button down and then a knit tie. And then when he's administering the test, he's, you know, again, wearing like a kind of tweedy jacket and he's got a chambray, basically a denim shirt, you know, and again, a like square knit tie. Like he's definitely got a sort of casual, relaxed look to him while still being dressed up. But like, Blake's first. Oof.
Some fashion I can highlight is what I can only assume you want for your funeral, how you want the people attending your funeral to dress. I'm going to play a little bit of Tony Amendola as the priest providing the sermon. What happens after this is way too visual, unfortunately, to play. But we'll
a lot of magic straight into the coffin.
Yeah, a lot of prestidigitation things from nothing, and then you throw them into the grave. But here's a little bit of the sermon.
His inquiring mind and vast knowledge embraced all the enigmas of our secret science. In theory, he was unexcelled, in execution, perfect. In his brief, illuminating journey, he unlocked all the arcane secrets of those who came before. Now he has been summoned by the Grand Master of the Universe to join the
So everybody attending the funeral is in white like all the magicians are in white tuxedos.
They're like white tailcoats, man.
White tailcoat tuxedos, yeah. And they've got...
And top hats.
White top hats, yes. Except for the priest, who apparently is just a priest, but he's also a magic priest. It's unclear exactly what's going on there.
So he's got the collar, but then he's got a black cape on, and he's wearing a black top hat.
Top hat. He's sort of the reverse of everybody else, except for a priest collar.
It's so much.
It's a lot. It's a lot, yeah. And then, yeah, they then the magic shop owner... Magics a magic wand out of nowhere and snaps it in half and throws it in. Yeah. And then someone else comes up and magics a pigeon out of nowhere, and I really wanted him to just snap its neck and throw it in the grave. Like, I didn't, but at the same time I was like, how amazing would it be if you're just like and then like tossed it in.
I know. It was it was like moments away from a Joe Bluth accident.
It's such a miss, like Penn and Teller or The Amazing Jonathan, like that style of magic, wasn't as big a thing back then. Penn and Teller existed, but they weren't as mainstream.
Those guys were actual like stage magicians.
Everyone behind attending the funeral is 100% an actual magician.
Yeah, yeah, because they're like in the credits. They're credited at in that. Very clear that they were actually stage magicians that they hired to basically do a couple of tricks like for this funeral scene, which I love. Like, it's so ridiculous. It's so great. But yeah, that scene is so much. And then, when we're talking about clothes, I also have to talk about when Elliot does the first remote viewing test, when he does that exam, he's wearing this white, like, jumpsuit with, like, a club collar. Yeah, he's wearing a jumpsuit, and like boiler suit, like work suit, but it's all white. It has the poofiest sleeves this side of the Elizabethan era. Like, it's really... you got to look at it. If you look at it properly, you'll just be like, what is this for? Who wears this? Cause it's not a clean suit, like working on silicone. It's not a proper like work suit. It's this really weird thing. And then
he just looks like he's wearing a white version of like Joel's jumpsuit basically.
Right. Yeah. But it's more ridiculous. I promise you, as weird as that sounds. And then there was another point where I took a note because I think it was actually the first time that Columbo takes him back to the scene of the murder and says, hey, can you feel around for psychic energy and help me catch this murderer? As he tries to be like, oh, it was suicide. And Columbo goes, wow, that's amazing. It couldn't have been suicide. Here's why. And he's like, well, maybe it was an accident, but he wanted it to happen. And oh, that's amazing. Oh, it couldn't have been an accident. Here's why. It had to be murder, which is really lovely. But
here's why. I have the reason right here.
A 3-pound corned beef.
That's it. Yeah. That's the reason.
That's it. Yep. Nobody buys a 3-pound corned beef right before they kill themselves.
Yeah. What was he planning with 3 pounds of corned beef? Like, that's a lot of corned beef for a guy. I mean, Max is
for
kind of
a single guy.
A single guy who's pretty trim. Like, is that the rest of his month is just getting through that corned beef?
I was going to say, I assume he would just slowly work his way through that corned beef.
Right.
But damn, son, 3 pounds.
3 pounds. I guess he's slicing up the cabbage. Maybe he's going to slice the corned beef. Like, that's the last test is like slice up a corned beef. I don't know, man. Maybe.
Yeah.
But it's pretty wonderful. Did you have anything else you want to say about costumes? Because I got one last clip I want to play. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, there's just one brief thing that was like, basically when Elliot takes off his jacket, I could not stop staring at his shirt because it's of the era in that like shirts were more blousy and sort of voluminous. I was fascinated because at his sleeve head, there is like a hard creased fold You know, that like, because it was ironed, like I couldn't help but notice, like, he took his jacket off and there was this hard crease in his sleeve all the way down. And then I noticed like that fold, which is basically to tuck the massive amount of fabric that is in the sleeve. Because those sleeves, again, it's very much that, like, how is this, how are you not wearing like a ruff and tights and a cod piece? Like, right. Your shirt is right there. Yeah, that's the only other thing I wanted to grouse about.
Oh, no,
what was the
fine.
Clip you had?
I love how my thought when we were getting into these was like, oh, we won't have anything to talk about once we hit the time jump. But no, the opposite apparently is the case.
Yeah. There's some real trash in clothing.
Yeah. Now
this,
it's less of like it's sort of excited and more like this has turned into a bit of a hate watch on several levels.
Yep.
But, yeah, the last little bit I wanted to play was some more quackery from the Institute. We get a bit of a tour where Columbo is on a tour of the various projects they've got going on, including they're hosting a visit of people from foreign lands. Columbo helpfully says, India, and points at the people who are dressed in Indian clothes. Thank you, Columbo.
Uh-huh.
That's very very nice of you.
Weird.
And don't do that. And then there's a woman who can feel color with her fingers, which is something. And then there is this.
But we humans aren't the only species that exhibit extrasensory perception. As you can see, plants too are subject to fear.
Hold on.
May well replace chemicals as a military defoliant.
Okay, I'm going to roll
this
it back
way,
here. Because
a phenomenon that may well replace chemicals as a military defoliant. This way, please.
I want to break down how crazy that is. We're going to use fear as a so like when an army base is like trying to get established, they're going to go out into the middle of the army base and be like, ah, get out of here, vines. Ah,
right. Yeah, it makes no sense. And also, let's be clear, what you aren't seeing, even though you're hearing a plant scream,
right,
is someone is holding fire to a leaf of that plant. They are torturing a plant.
Also, the plant shakes.
Yeah.
It doesn't just scream, it shakes like it shakes in fear.
Yeah, it does. And it's
so stupid. It's the stupidest thing that happens in this episode. And that is saying something because a lot of very stupid stuff happens in this episode. But if I had to pick a stupidest moment, that wins our stupidest moment of the week.
That's definitely the dumbest moment. Yep.
Play that little bit because it's bonkers. It's I don't even know what to say about that. I think it's as good a place as any to end, unless you got something extra you wanted to talk about.
No, man. That's
okay.
It.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Next week, we'll be taking a look at Murder, Smoke, and Shadows, starring Fisher Stevens as the murderer.
Ooh.
So that'll be exciting. That's going to do it for us. This has been Columboys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing.
Yes.
3-pound corned beef.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.